Welcome to the Enlighten Up Podcast, where I am going to take you into a deep exploration of what it means to exist in this current reality. We are going to raise your vibes, open your mind, expand your heart, and dive deep into the wondrous mysteries and possibilities of this lifetime. There's been a spiritual catalyst that has set in motion the awakening process of many across the globe to return to the knowingness of self and unite what has been separated. Together, we're going to bring light into that darkness. We're going to remember the joy of living. But most of all, we're going to turn up the volume of our own eternal power and do the thing we're here to do. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Enlighten Up Podcast. I am your host, Nicole Frolic, and today I'm really excited to introduce you to a brand new guest to the show. Her name is Katie Silcox, and she is a New York Times bestselling author of the book Healthy, Happy, Sexy, Ayurveda Wisdom for Modern Women. And she is the founder of the Shakti School, a premier online certification school for women-centered holistic wellness. She holds a master's degree in Ayurvedic medicine, is a member of the National Ayurvedic Medicine Association, and she's currently pursuing depth studies in Jungian psychology. Her platform focuses on the convergence of ancient holistic medicine, functional medicine, science, and heart-centered spirituality, which I absolutely love. In her former life, she's been a researcher in artificial intelligence. She's been a cover model for Yoga Journal magazine in Russia, and she's the owner of a beach bar in Spain. How fun!
So many lifetimes in one lifetime.
I know the feeling. How are you doing, Katie?
I'm great. I'm so happy to be back with you on the podcast.
I know. It was fun to record with you on your podcast, and I'm excited to have you here on mine. And so I got to know, you know, that's really interesting because if you're a bar owner and then you're a holistic healer and, you know, a lot of people will often put people into boxes and put these labels on them and think they've got to kind of emerge as this specific being. But the truth is, a lot of our personality and lessons come from these places that most people wouldn't draw the connection point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just recorded a podcast on our show this morning on the divine feminine because everyone's sort of talking about it, but then we're not really even sure what we're talking about. And one of the things that I've tracked with the feminine energy is she does not like to be placed in boxes. And we need, the feminine needs structures to flow through, but she's the flow. And so one of the ways we can know that we're kind of not in it is when we're getting really strongly in those labels of like, you're a this and you're a that, and I'm this. And this whole idea of identity is even really problematic because none of us fit into any of these boxes neatly. And so, yes, I have lived multiple experiences and, you know, I think there's a soul that's kind of riding through all of these experiences. But, you know, when I owned a beach bar, I started drinking tequila at like 4 p.m. every day in my 20s. That led to health issues, you know, not only that, but, yeah, you know, health issues that really inspired me to stop drinking and not make that a part of my life and study Ayurveda. And so I think all of these threads are connected. I studied artificial intelligence and still find it all very fascinating. And I have a really, really strong scientific brain, but that doesn't lead to love. And so how do we love science and bring science into love has really been kind of a central theme of my whole journey.
Yeah. And I love that. I think that's so, I've never heard anyone say it like that. And it's so true that this idea of putting yourself into a box is very anti-feminine energy.
That's it. That's right. Yeah.
It's, and I relate to it a lot because I think growing up, everyone, I mean, this world is kind of designed to fit you somewhere. Like, where do you belong and what's your role? Mm-hmm. And truly, when you're when you're create in your creative flow and you're a creator of any kind of anything, it's so important to not have the labels, because that's so restrictive, and that really kind of, it not only pigeonholes you, but it limits where you think you can even go with anything.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Again, another, because I've been deep thinking on, because people are like, we like your stuff because we can connect to our feminine energy. And we tend to attract a lot of women into our program who are like, type A, do it, get shit done. I'm one of them, right? And we actually graduated our year-long class last night, and the words feminine, divine feminine, feminine kept coming up. And I, this morning I'm like, how can you define that which does not like to be defined? But we have to, like, to talk about it. And so one of the things that the divine feminine is to me is really magical and mysterious, in that she is the great, I don't know. I don't know how it's going to turn out. I don't know exactly where I'm going to be in 2 weeks or two millennia. I'm not sure. And in that mystery and in that openness, there's a lot of magnetism and creativity that can come when you're in the willingness to be destroyed. And I think we live in a culture that's so much about shoring ourselves up, shoring up our identities, our bank accounts, our houses, our, and that makes sense. It's not bad to want to have safety and comfort, but like the destructive element is the thing that really brings in that new water that can take you to that next place. And I will say, it's easy to talk about, and it's really hard and sometimes miserable to be in that willingness to let the old you be destroyed in the fire of who you're becoming. Obviously, there is an enduring you that we're interested in that continues throughout. But yeah, like these old models are sort of things that we cling to, thinking that they're keeping us safe when they're actually preventing us from stepping into something even better.
Yeah.
As you know.
Yeah. Well, and even as you say that, it's something that, you know, we die and rebirth ourselves often throughout this life. It's not just a one-time death rebirth kind of cycle. Like, we're constantly going through this death and rebirth cycle of ourselves. And sometimes it's a little more, it's an easier transition. And there's other times where it feels very jarring. And I think when we're really pushing ourselves to become the greater versions of ourselves that are ultimately there waiting for us as we go through a lot of this deeper work and the healing and the evolution of our own conscious mind, that it can almost feel like you don't even know who you are anymore. And even, I mean, I even was struggling with that like this week, of realizing there's so many new things that I'm stepping into. And it's like, I don't know this version of myself yet. It's really scary. Like, who is this person? And am I ready to really let go of the old version? And that can be really difficult. And being on this journey for 25 years, you'd think that that part would maybe be behind you at this point, but it's not. If you're constantly in the space of healing and evolution, you know, it's going to be an ongoing process. For you, how long have you been on your journey, and what have been some of the pivotal moments that were defining moments in changing your trajectory?
Yeah, I mean, I think I get caught in that same mindset of, you would think after, I think you and I are similar of age, and like, you would think after this many years that I wouldn't still be X, Y, and Z-ing. And it's like, yes. And also, I think it's a good sign on the spiritual path when you feel like, I don't know exactly who I am or what I'm meant to be doing. I feel like I'm being held out in an abyss. There is fundamental groundlessness is the underlying nature of reality, according to the systems that I've studied, which is multiple ones. And they call it fundamental groundlessness, but it's also when you realize it's, there's no ground, you realize that there's no ground. So just jump, right? And it's also fundamental fullness. And that's the masculine and feminine, fundamental emptiness and fundamental fullness coexisting all at once. So when you're in that openness of, oh shit, I don't know, my mentor says to me, this is a really good sign. And also, one of the constructs that I think folks like us and your listeners are trying to work through is this idea of being broken and needing to be fixed, of being problematic and needing to come into fullness. And from a tantric perspective, that whole setup is not exactly the way things are, that the innate nature of who we are is intrinsically holy. And we parse things into today I'm doing good, or tomorrow I'm in a dark night of the soul. And so to answer your question, I've been on this journey for probably many, many, many thousands of lifetimes, but I really seriously started studying meditation when I was about 19, and yoga and Ayurveda and all these things developed after that. But my path really, really shifted when I, like you said, was on the cover of the yoga journal. I was a pretty well-known-ish teacher traveling the world, teaching Tantra from very much like a good, but a very male patriarchal lens. And I had a panic attack the month that I was on the cover of Yoga Journal. And I thought I was dying. I like went to the hospital and they, you know, did all the blood work. And I was like, I'm sure something's so bad, something's so wrong. And the doctor, you know, and by the way, I'd already had a book come out. I was on the cover of the Yoga Journal and I was touring the world as a well-known teacher in yoga and meditation. And I'm in the hospital. The doctor comes out. He's like, young lady, we did all the tests on you. You're as healthy as a horse. There's absolutely nothing wrong with you. And he hands me a brochure, and I'll never forget this as long as I live, in the middle of, you know, little town, Virginia. And the brochure said, you should try meditation. I was like, humble pie, right? And I realized that all of these hundreds of thousands of mantras and hours of asana and all these yoga trainings, not that they'd been for nothing, but they weren't touching into what was actually there and what was actually longing to be known. And that's what really led me to kind of leave that world and leave that structure of the old sort of traditional ways of practicing, which I have a lot of love and genuine respect for, but to lean into this wild feminine approach that led me to working with a therapist and learning about trauma. And that's the word that we use now in our culture. And I think we have to be really careful with that, because in the old days, and you know this as a shamanic practitioner, like we all have quote trauma. We used to call it karma. It's the way in which what couldn't have been processed or seen through the loving eyes of compassion in the moment is stored in the system, and it's largely unconscious. And so bringing that out was actually the path for me, rather than what I had been doing, which was, oh my God, I'm so fundamentally fucked up and broken. Let me do all this yoga and meditation and mantra and visualization and all these things to just feel better, to just feel like I could function on the planet, to feel like I was doing something to fix a fundamentally flawed human. And that orientation has been shifted. Now, does it come up all the time? Sure. But if you can start from what my mentor calls the healing vortex, which is this place of love and openness and looking at your life and all the light and the dark with a fundamental sense of richness and appreciation, even the stuff that's tough, that actually creates the energetics that enable the patterns from below to emerge. As long as we're in a constricted state of seeing ourselves as and parts of ourselves as bad, we create an energetic system of tension and tightness. And in Ayurvedic medicine, we say this energy, prana, cannot flow through tension. And so it's this radical allowing of whatever it is, demon or angel, and you know, we're the ones labeling it, to be met as divinity. That's what allows the whole energy system to actually open up and relate to things. But here's the key. We can't, and I struggle with this, right? We can't want them to change. I mean, we can want whatever we want, but it's helpful if we can actually meet things without expecting things to transform and alchemize and be better. Mm-hmm. It's like, that's the secret. It's like letting it there. Yeah, go ahead.
No, you're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct. It was a lesson I learned probably I would say very early in my yoga experience, as someone who was deathly scared of the yoga community,
Smart, you're a smart girl.
I was so hesitant to get involved in yoga just because the community itself felt so rigid. It's so funny because it's all about flexibility, right?
Flexibility.
And but for me, whenever I would walk into a yoga studio or yoga class, it's funny. I was just talking about this on a recent podcast. It feels like everyone was so serious and everything had to be perfect and everyone need to look perfect. And it was just, I'm like, I'm coming into this and I am so imperfect in this place. Like the and I don't feel comfortable to just be imperfect. And so luckily, I had enough courage after only 4 months of trying yoga to actually go for my teacher's training. But I chose a place in Costa Rica that was very different from most other yoga schools in that it allowed you to find your flow. Like it wasn't about, we're not going to teach you our way. We're going to guide you to find your way. And so that to me felt less intimidating and more open. And in that particular 1 month program, I remember being in just a seated, spinal twist. Okay. Really simple yoga pose. But for me, I was so like frustrated about like, why am I not where everyone else is? Like, why, and it's just that like type A personality of like, I need to control my experience. But realizing, you know what if I was just okay with where I'm at right now? What if I just let it be? And in that moment of just relaxing and enjoying where I was, that's when my body opened up and I went so much deeper into the pose than I ever was able to go.
Exactly. And that's a physical manifestation of exactly what I'm speaking of. And obviously, energy was involved in your emotion and your mind. And I mean, obviously, the yoga world's vast and you can find, but to me, that's the feminine. And what is so beautiful is the yin and the yang, right? To be able to find in ourselves the hatha, the sun and the moon of how. So I have a school that has thousands of women in it. And let me tell you, as the leader of a school of thousands of women, all you want to do is like be in your masculine with all these women to counteract all that feminine energy. And I have to do that, right? In some ways. And then, I want to go be with my man and be a girly, girly girl again. But my point is, in our own selves, that creative life bringing energy happens when we can actually hold both in equal amounts. Because what I was going to say is, if you've spent time around 1,000 women, you start to realize that just feminine energy only isn't great either. Like,
No, it's not.
it's at the extreme, it's called chaos. And so, rigidity, this is what my teacher says, rigidity over here, chaos over here. And both in the nervous system, rigidity and chaos are both extreme states of the nervous system that we want to avoid. And so, very much, I think for everyone, it's about noticing when we're going into more rigidity and noticing when we're going into more chaos and not making either of those bad or wrong, but dancing a middle ground with those rather than living in rigidity or living in chaos or living in both extremes. And I think what I love about Ayurveda is that it teaches us that by nature, by birth, your mind-body type, your uniqueness is going to have a tendency towards more rigidity as a tendency or more chaos. And if you love rigidity, you're going to become an anatomy obsessionado and study maybe a Iyengar and yoga and Bikram and like want to have every pose perfect or only this sequence, right? If you're more of a chaotic person, you're going to want to be in the feminine form flow, right? And you're going to want everything to be open. And so I think there is that dance, and that's tricky because if you're out of balance, you will seek experiences, people, food, everything that will take you further into your imbalance. And if you're in balance, you seek things that'll take you further into balance. And so it can be a tricky ride because how do I know if I'm speaking from or living from my intuition or living from something else. And so being able to distinguish the true voice of my intuition and my knowingness from the sneaky voice of my ego and all of my strategies and manipulations, which we all have, right? Yep. To know the difference between the two, I think is really what yoga should in be about if we're speaking about it on a subtle level.
Yeah. And it's, and, you know, we have these extremes. I love that you describe the rigidity and the chaos within the nervous system as like two ultimate polarities that we're our system is trying to avoid. And at the same time, recognizing there is a time for absolute rigidity.
Absolutely.
And there is
absolutely
a time for pure chaos.
Absolutely.
Because like, there's going to be a time where I'm like, no, this is my boundary and you are not crossing it. You know, you can be exactly very rigid in that. And then there's another time you're like, you know what? I don't know what's going on. I'm just going to go with the flow. And I'm just going to like stumble around and be like a leaf and get blown around and I'll see where I land, you know? And there's nothing wrong with either or. It's just like you said, you don't want to live in either or all the time.
And growing our capacity. I love that you mentioned that because it's not about not doing them.
Yes.
It's about growing our capacity to remain not necessarily even calm, but that there's a witness who has the resiliency to be able to withstand both the state of rigidity and the state of chaos. Because for some people, it feels terrible to put up a strong, rigid boundary. And for some people, it feels terrible to lose control and go trance dancing, you know, like, so like that, you know, I've been dating someone that like, you know, he's an ex military FBI. I mean, you can't get any more in the strong masculine and everything, you know, super high testosterone. And he is literally like, you will see me dead before I will ecstatic dance with you. Why? It's just so fun and so easy and so free. And then I realized, no, you know, that would be like me standing in formation, being in like an army line, like you will see me dead before I do that. Right. And so I don't think it's that we, but, and yet I think what a real yogini in the sense of the word of she who has 360 degrees of herself, I think at the end, we all have tendencies. I'm always going to want to ecstatic dance over living that more rigid life. But I think the true goal is that we're able to access these parts that, like you spoke of in my podcast, that can play or that can be disciplined when needed. And that really is the opening of the being and the consciousness.
Yeah. Can you become the master of both instead of letting them master you? Mm-hmm. And not master from, you know, this idea. I think the ego's version of master versus the heart's version of master are two different things, but it's knowing that, you know, your power is sacred and you know how to exercise it without it being exercised from you. So I'm curious because I've never actually spoken of Ayurvedic medicine on the podcast. And so I'd love to kind of go a little deeper into that with you. How did you discover Ayurvedic medicine?
Yeah. Ayurveda means the science of life. And so it's, on one hand, it's this beautiful 5,000-year-old indigenous folk medicine tradition from India. And even when you study the history of Ayurveda, you see the Indians were super influenced by the Greeks and the Egyptians and the Chinese and the Arabs. It was like all, and Europeans, it was like all meeting in this flowering in India called Ayurveda. And you can see the roots of our medicine, our Western medicine, in Ayurvedic medicine, and that we have the three bodily humors in Western medicine. And in Ayurveda, we call them the three doshas. And so it's this idea that the reality really can't be mapped, but we're going to try because it's helpful, and that people are different, but we can see there are these three core mind body types that are based on a five element system. And so when you learn about how much earth you have in you, or how much fire, or how much water, or how much air, or spaciousness, it's like a light goes off, because it's that you were born that way. There are people who are really spacey on the planet, And the shadow of that is they lose their keys and they're hard to like pin down and get to go on a date at a certain time. But the upside is that they're etheric, so they can take from the unmanifest, and they're really usually great artists and poets and thinkers. And so on and on, we could talk about what are these elements in us, each of us a combination of all five of them in a unique kind of thumbprint type of way that you were born with. And then here's the problem. Over life, shit happens to you. People hurt your feelings. You have weird parents. Something goes down, you know, all the stuff that you work with people in. And the original elemental nature that you were born with, that is the perfect elemental nature for your soul's role, gets dampened. And you can start to get imbalances that are not indigenous to your original nature. And then you can start to manifest those. So like a really common example is someone with a very thin bone structure, a very light bone structure. They're just people with thin, light bones. They tend to get osteoporosis much easier than people with big, sturdy, wet, thick bones. It's just obvious, right? Well, those people, because of their airy, etheric bone nature, they can intuitively and unconsciously sense that levity. And so they will do what? Want to eat more sweets and fat to counteract all that lightness. And so you have to be really careful when we're judging people, because you might think, oh, this person is quite large. And yet you look at their bones and they're really tiny. And you see this a lot in like healers and psychics, right? They all tend to be quite plump and beautiful in that way, but it's because they're so etheric. They're living in the ether. So they need to ground themselves with fat and sweets and meat. And do some of them go overboard? Sure. Am I maybe sometimes one of those people? Yes, right? And so Ayurveda really is a language of compassion for being able to see your original nature. And what we're attempting to do is to help people get back to their original nature, because they don't need those adaptations anymore, and to live from that original nature. There's one more quick thing I'll say about that. I always thought that I was this airy fairy kind of, you know, anxious person. And then as I started to get, in Ayurveda, fear and anxiety are air movement, right? Lack of root systems. So I used to think I was that. As my nervous system started to heal and become more resilient, and I got that air, think of a fire getting blown by the wind. As the wind started to die down, all this fire came out. And now I'm angry all the time and I'm irritable and I get rashes and this and that. And so initially you might be like, this sucks, but no, it's that fire was being repressed in the body. And now all of a sudden that the air, when you get your anxiety down, now all the anger comes out and you can process that. And then of course you can now see the water and the earth that was there all along, but that water and earth was getting burned up by that repressed fire. And so we can think of this on a physical level, but it shows up psycho-emotionally and energetically as well.
This is really important, because oftentimes when we get into this place of really, for lack of a better word, really anal about our healing, and we can really want to just get to the roots of everything and understand that, we sometimes won't understand that, for instance, like you having a rash, like your instant thing is, oh, what am I doing wrong? And it's like, well, no, maybe you're doing everything right. And that's supposed to come up right now. And that's a good sign.
Absolutely. Yeah. We call that stuff ama, A-M-A. It's a great Sanskrit word, and it means gunk. It means toxins. And you have emotional ama, and you have psychic ama, and you have physical ama. And so everything is mapping on the same level. So what happens physically happens emotionally, happens mentally, happens spiritually. So as you're doing a detox, all that gunk starts to come out. And the teaching of Ayurveda say, as it went in, so it will come out. Mm-hmm. Same with the feelings. I'm like, oh my God, yes, grief. Yes, anger. Thank you. Thank you. It's been sitting down in there and now it can be released. Unfortunately, it feels like you're eating a shit sandwich, right? And it sucks. And so we don't want to do that. And what do? We distract and go to Instagram or that or this, whatever our distraction is. So if we can kind of just stay with it, yes, you're right. Usually it dissipates and digests itself.
Yeah. And so I think that's just really important for anyone out there, because sometimes you don't realize that as you are getting stronger in your own healing, you're now in a place where the really heavy stuff can come out now. And so it's not that you're not doing something wrong. It's probably because you're doing a lot of things right now, and you've got to be willing and able to let the body finally purge and release. And it does. It can get really exhausting after a while sometimes, because we're so trained to be linear in how everything operates in this world. But healing, there's nothing linear about healing. There's nothing linear about healing. It's truly like twists and turns, valleys and peaks, and like you can't predict it. You really can't predict it. With this Ayurvedic wisdom and knowledge that you have and the healing that you've done, was there anything that you experienced in your journey as you were using these principles and understanding that really surprised you, that you had an unexpected experience that was a teaching moment for you?
I mean, I'm laughing because this journey I'm on in this lifetime is definitely one of like, let's do this. Mm-hmm. Like I am like a professional, not in the sense of my job, but in the sense of like soul on the planet to do this work. So it's my passion. Like I'm sure it is yours. Like it's a healer archetype. And I feel like every week I'm like, whoa, you know? And so I'm laughing like, well, okay, like here's what happened this week. And I think a big part of that is that I work with an incredible therapist that I call my mentor, but you know, it's like a teacher of lifetimes. It's sort of that kind of deep mentorship beyond just a therapist. And been with her for about 5 years, and she's who helped transition me out of that rigid yoga world, which I love and really do give a lot of gratitude for, but it was time to kind of move on. And I think the biggest shift for me in healing happened when I realized that and this is very Jungian psychological work as well, of dream work. And, you know, you and I talked about plant medicine, and that's not been a part of my journey, but I am very much on like a very psychedelic experience every single week when I'm going into these sessions, or when I'm working on dream time, or when I'm laying down and doing energy work on myself. Jung spoke about the active imagination, what comes and bubbles up from the underworld, from the first three chakras into the heart or into the mind. It's truly fascinating the way that images have been a huge part of my healing. Whereas if you would have told me that when I was working in the yoga world, I worked in a tradition called the Sri Vidya, and Sri Vidya is in them. I feel that I still am. Like the Sri Vidya is like, let me show you this feminine way. But in India, it's very specific. And there are very complex mantras, yantras, rituals, and they're all beautiful, but they're super complex and they're very Hindu in a way. And so to abandon that, which is comforting, it's comforting to know that you need to go to your first chakra. It's at your tailbone. You visualize a downward shaped triangle. The triangle should be dark blue or red in color. You should visualize a snake there, and now feel the snake, do this and that, and put this sound there. You have someone telling you what to do. And we love that, especially when we didn't get it from a wise elder. Mm-hmm. And so to leave that and let me go down into the tailbone and open my heart and open my mind, and even talking about it, it's terrifying to let go. And the chakra itself says, Katie, look what's here. And what's here is not a snake, it's a dragon. And you're like, ooh, dragon. Yes, can you let the, now become the dragon. Let the dragon energy just fully, you become it, it becomes you. And all of a sudden, a bladder inflammation, chronic, that you've had probably since you were in the womb, but definitely in your entire 30s and 40s, you can feel it explode. and that heat and that anger and that inflammation through the dragon that you'd been holding in your bladder pop. And now that wild dragon that's also pretty stable and knows what it's doing takes up the whole room and leaves your bladder. You know, no one would have ever told me to do that in a yoga class or a Sri video retreat or a 10-day ashram meditation, because no one can tell you that. That is an intimate psychedelic inner experience of you meeting you. And I think most people don't have those experiences because we have not been trained to think that that is okay. If anything, we've been trained, men and women, to think we're cuckoo if we do that. And so that to me, just having a mentor give me permission and teach me how to do that has been, I mean, I obviously adore my teacher, and I think it can be helpful to, like, to have a guide. So that's been a big change for me.
Yeah, I love that. And I think, you know, having someone to lean on is paramount in this journey. You need someone to bounce some things off of sometimes, even if they don't say one thing to you, you know, it's just they're holding the space for you to, like, talk, to say it out loud. I don't know, for me, sometimes I'm just, as soon as I hear myself say something to someone else, like, it's all of a sudden like clicks, I get the answer already. But this idea of allowing the vision to be shown to you, the image, through some symbolism, through that very strong imagery, is something I'm very familiar with and have worked with since I was a teenager as well. And that is, to me, the most beautiful part of learning, healing, is to let it be shown to you through you. You know, like, by you just letting go and allowing whatever is going to surface without any expectation, without any understanding of what it might be, you know, and that's the beauty of going into the emptiness. In the emptiness, anything is possible, right? When it's full, you're working with limited resources. And so this is something that I think is a beautiful gift. It's one that I've been so grateful to have such a strong imagination that I don't feel any need to hinder it or judge it, just to let it flow. And as a result, I've been able to see for specific clients what their healing could potentially be offering them through, like, a little mini guided journey, which then allows them to go and explore it on their own or allow something new to come up. Because when you start to break the walls of potentiality of what you think everything needs to be, and you go beyond, which is that very Piscean Neptunian energy that the Jungian wisdom is very much based in, is like this boundless possibilities of limitlessness and anything's possible. And what if you just explore? Because I truly believe that if we see it, even though we've never known it before in this lifetime, it exists somewhere.
Absolutely. Yeah, and even the energetics of how we meditate. So meditation has been taught to us as a masculine form. When we meditate, often, at least in the yoga world that I come from and some of the Buddhists, of course, the tantrics are slightly different. We meditate typically by watching the thoughts and watching them pass. And maybe we have a mantra. Maybe we, you know, now people are starting to explore the body a little bit. But in Hinduism and tantra from the Hindus, you go up the front of the body and out the head. And there's like a joke. It's like, of course, the man who made, you know, would want his energy to go up and explode out of his head. That's the masculine way of having an orgasmic experience, right? And like the feminine has a very different ecstatic experience. And so in Taoism, it's much more aligned with balance in the sense of we go down the back body. You drop your attention like a waterfall down the back of your spine, and then you come up the front body. But in other traditions, like the ones we practice, you're not just going up and down, right? It's 360 degrees. It's spiraling. And so we go out the front body and around like angel wings, or we go out the back body and let it come back. And there's like so many ways to meditate with energy that allow you to actually experience dimensionality and sacred geometry. And for so many of us, we've been taught to stay in that limited possibility. And so I think you'll find this interesting. When you meditate, so imagine drawing a line from your throat all the way back as far as you can imagine behind you. Just asking people to leave their physical body at the throat or the heart or the belly and go backwards. Most people's energy bodies are way, way, way out in front of them. You know, that's, we drive, we're on the internet, we're looking at our kids, we're looking at TV. And so our energy is going out, which is all future oriented. And the front body is the material world. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense that everybody wants to go and do ayahuasca right now because we're so material world living and obsessed. But if you want, you can actually go back body meditation, go far back behind you. You'll find it's more challenging because we don't live back there. And the back body is the realm of limitless possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
It's the realm of the unconditional and the angelic and the deities and the ancestor. It's all back there. So I've had a lot of great experiences lately with just letting myself open to that.
So cool that we're having this conversation, because literally yesterday morning while I was in meditation, I was just like, oh, I think today I'm going to work on like some abundance and, you know, prosperity kind of energy, which I don't usually work on. But for some reason, like, you know, yesterday morning, that's like, yeah, okay, that's what I'm going to do. Here it is, like 5 o'clock in the morning, you know, and I'm like, okay. And it's just like, I kind of allow myself to be guided into where I don't have a specific thing that I know I'm going to do when I go into meditation. I kind of let it show itself. And in this one, as I was opening up, there was showing me to imagine all of these different symbols of abundance, whether currency signs or whatever, gold coins, like whatever you could think about, like when it comes to material abundance. And then also, like, again, like the image of a flower blooming and all this kind of stuff. And so I start to see all of this in my field all around me, 360 degrees, just seeing all these floating symbols. And then I was like, okay, now you're going to activate yourself as a magnet. So you are now the magnetic polarity to all of this abundance. And so the first thing was like, okay, we're going to open up the front heart, you know, so that you are able to receive and all of that stuff. And then I got this message, well, don't forget about the back of your heart. Don't forget about opening the back. And the reason why it was about opening the back, which for any of my listeners out there, don't worry, I'm creating this meditation for you because I was like, it was so cool. I heard this, like, you also want to be open to everything you don't know is coming your way, everything that you're not expecting, everything that's unknown. You know, when you can be open and receptive to the mystery, the unknown of all the abundance that your mind can't conceive in front of you, and let yourself be open, you now are open to all the things you can conceive and all the things you can't conceive. And so it kind of really opens up that portal of true limitlessness by opening up the back.
I mean, and the back body is the place in which we can receive. So in Ayurvedic medicine, the throat is the element of ether, spaciousness. Mm-hmm. And the etheric is the realm in which these divine soul codes of your highest purpose, highest power can come through. It's like your body has a divine template that's not based on your genetic upbringing and disease profile. And so when you actually open up the back of the throat in particular, you're inviting in these etheric codes that have the perfect template for you. And so it's like, whoa. And then you can bring that forward and put it in a relationship and put it in your bank account and put it in your career. And so one of my tantra teachers used to say, everyone's talking about manifestation. Please pray. Please, God, don't let me manifest anything that is not coming from that divine soul code template, because we all know the feeling of manifesting a partner that's not the one that's really good for you, or manifesting a house and then it's full of mold, and manifesting, you know, so we also want those manifestations to be infused with that template that's right for you.
Mm-hmm. And what better than that which created your divine blueprint to be in charge of bringing that forward? Not your mind, not like whatever this world's teaching you, not what anyone else is teaching you, but just letting it come through you from the unknown.
I'm tearing up. Yeah, I mean that really is for me what it's all about. It's like humbling the ego who thinks she knows, right? So certain, and allowing that higher mind to bring it in and take away that which is not. And I think that's been a journey and still is a struggle for me of like, please take away the things in my life that maybe I'm attached to that aren't that.
Yeah, it's so interesting what you're able to learn when you do empty out. This is why the shamans use a hollow bone, right? Like there's the tool of the hollow bone, and it's just so make yourself empty so the divine can come through you uninhibited, right? And so this idea of allowing ourselves to be like hollow bone and have the song of the universe be sung through us, uninhibited, unencumbered, and the purity of that to just be felt, to be heard, to flow. It allows us to be open to things that we never knew existed, we never knew was possible. Have you ever been with a, I'm sure you have you ever been with a client where there was a traditional protocol that you knew could work for them, but inside, when you really kind of was like, let me just get out of the actual protocol mode. And is there something else that could be even better for this client that I don't even maybe know about, but it will be shown to me? Have you ever had those experiences?
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking about so we have this school and we have about 25 teachers that support the year program, and I've hired teachers to teach the protocols because I think the protocols and honoring the tradition are important, and I want to be a part of keeping those traditions alive. In the ancient Charaka-Samhita, these ancient rishis from India spoke whispers to us in the technological age. They knew we were coming. They were these wise seers, is what rishi means. And they say in this 2000 or something year old book, make sure that so Ayurveda will travel far and wide. Make sure that it be adapted to the time, the place, and the people and the culture in which it's being presented. If you don't present it in a way it can be digested, it will turn to poison in their bodies. If you do, give it to them like warm soup, they can eat it. And so I think that it's important to bring the traditions and the protocols. But notice I said I have 20 teachers. Because I don't necessarily want to teach that part. It's not my passion, and it is the passion for some people. Some people love the rules and the protocols, and they're so good at it. And I think there's value in learning how to play the scales on a piano so that then you can improvise. Otherwise, you're just sort of airy-fairy and kind of making shit up, which I'm not a fan of either, unless you're just a savant. Most people aren't savants. And so you have all of that, you honor all of that, you learn how to play the piano scales, but then you're a boring musician. You have to add your flair, you have to improvise. And that's where the deep healer, the artist and the healer, the scientist and the healer come together. And that's the realm I really love. And I love the subtle. And in the subtle realm, all bets are off. Right? We can understand that the legs and the bones and the muscle and the fat and the root chakra and the pelvis are the heavier parts of our being. That's where we tend to store the more dense material from past lives. It's where we tend to store the traumas that happened to us, like we spoke of in my podcast. They tend to go there, right? And be stored there. But of course, you might be meditating on the throat and you have a memory, or, you know, there. In the we learn anatomy, but no one looks like the skeleton when you open up a cadaver. Like everyone is so super unique. And so in Ayurveda, you learn the colors of the chakras, you learn the qualities, you learn all the food lists for your mind and body type. But then when you get out in the real world, you realize no one looks like that. No one actually is like that. You have to rely on the intuition. More than the rules. And so now you're with your client you go to the root chakra, for example. That's my techniques are more in the subtle realm. And just like I told you, you realize that this root chakra that they're experiencing, it is not red, which is the quote ideal color for the root. It's the color of vitality and passion. And, you know, you want red to be the root. It's the root of the earth. It's lava. Now you go down there, lo and behold, that is blue for them. Why? Well, maybe their root chakra is so overly red that the blue color is heat helping to mitigate like the imbalance there. So yes, is the answer that you learn the rules to be able to throw out the rule book and use it when needed. Like,
yeah.
But I'm way too rebellious. I'm sure it would be good for me to like, okay, get back to the rules for a while.
No, yeah, it's, I think, well, again, this goes back to everything. Everything has its role in its place and it has validity. It's about knowing when and where and how to use it. And I think that was really sage advice that was written 2000 years ago in this idea of learn how to adapt it. And I think that's something that can get really, well, it can get missed in a lot of different arenas, but
absolutely.
When we talk about even just the spiritual communities and the metaphysical communities, is this idea of like, well, no, we need to be like the ancients and all that. And one of the messages that I've been getting through my work is you can take the ancient shamanic principles, but know that you are an advanced being living in a, meaning like you're living in a world that's advanced from where that originated. And it's good to adapt it to whatever you feel is pertinent and potent for this time period and the people living in it. Because like with even when it comes to communication and delivering a message, you can't deliver the same message using the exact same words to every single person and think it's going to land the way it needs to land with each person the same way. It's not. You've got to learn how to adapt your message so that the person can receive it. And so we're learning how to adapt these different healing modalities and ancient wisdoms into a way that people today are able to receive it.
Well, I'm smiling as you're saying this because also the more you expand your consciousness, the more you realize that we actually are those ancients.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's so funny, you know, we are them. They're back. It's you and me. And now we're dealing with what we're dealing with in this particular earth walk. That is a truly challenging one in some ways and an amazing one in other ways. So I had a teacher, a healer friend last week. I was telling her about, I was taking some pharmaceutical medications for something. And I don't love that, but I'm also not an extremist that never takes anything, right? We embrace science, medicine, Western medicine, and Ayurveda. And I said, oh, I'm taking these pharmaceuticals, but I really needed them for this thing. And I'm actually feeling so much better. And she was an osteopath. So she was doing craniosacral and feeling me. She's like, you feel really good. And I'm like, oh, my conscious mind, my Ayurveda trained mind, my, you know, the whole wellness world that hates everything for good reason, you know, Western medical was kicking up. And she was like, you're actually in a much better state and you're using the medicine as it's meant to be used for a short period of time for an acute thing. And then you're going to go back and heal yourself from that.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you're not living in ancient India where you are in a community of healers and women, and you guys are going out in the backyard and boiling down the turmeric and holding one another's babies, where you have the luxury in some ways of being able to do things all natural. We're living in isolated communities. We're online. I mean, we have to be realistic with our healing practices. And I think there's just so much pressure, at least in some of the more like herbalism and Ayurveda and yoga worlds, to be either one thing or another. And I think that's extremist thinking. I think it's fundamentalism. And we celebrate women who take birth control, if that's their choice, who get Botox, who dye their hair. And, you know, that's like sacrilegious to some people, where you have to be all natural all the time. And I really reject that notion that we're even able to pick and choose. And I think people can have a humbling moment. You know, if you break your arm, you're going to be very grateful for Western medicine.
No, absolutely. I feel the same way. And I think it goes even back to the very beginning of talking about the rigidity and the flexibility. And it's like, even in your mission to heal, you can become so rigid that you actually lose touch with a medicine that could be of use to you that is coming from this world today. And it could be some kind of pharmaceutical. I'm the same as you. Like, there's I rarely take any kind of over-the-counter pharmaceuticals or drugs, but there have been times where they literally one literally saved my life. I remember being in Bali for 30 days, and just traveling and backpacking and going through, and I ended up getting the Bali belly, as many people do. And I was like, I'm gonna heal this. And of course, this was a time when Eat, Pray, Love had been out. And I was like, I'm gonna go to that healer that's in the book, and I'm gonna go to her. And I went to her, and she made me sniff all these concoctions, and she's like, you should be better in the morning, and all this kind of stuff. And of course, there was a moment where I did feel like 25, 30% better. And I was like, oh, okay, it's gonna work. And then the next day, no. And it was just horrible. Like, just all of the things that come with the Bali belly, which are not fun. Like, I could not walk down the street for 5 minutes without needing to run to a bathroom. And it was horrible. Nothing was staying down. Like, it was like I couldn't eat. And I was like, 5 days went on. And I actually had a local Balinese person come up to me, this guy who was trying to sell art. And he asked, and he could see that I wasn't feeling well. And I told him what had happened and that I'd gone to the doctor. And he's like, oh, Nicole. He said, you need real medicine. And I was looking at him going, what do you mean real medicine? I was getting real medicine. And he's like, no, you need to go get antibiotics. And I was like, antibiotics? No, that is like the devil. I am not getting antibiotics. But of course, as soon as I went to this other island, Gili Trawangan, I went to a 5-star hotel. I went straight to their infirmary. The guy looked at me, he goes, here's your antibiotic for $10. It's probably one of the strongest antibiotics on the market. Okay, my girlfriend who I was traveling with is like, holy crap, he gave you that. And I'm like, yeah, my life got so much better within like a few hours. And then I was able to actually enjoy the rest of my trip. And it's just like one of those moments where I kind of needed it in that mer it was an emergency situation.
And it's a teaching, right? So many herbalists and so many vegans, and no offense if that's your diet, but so many vegans tell us, oh my God, I started feeling better when I actually ate a little bone broth or ate a little ghee or a little bit of meat, God forbid. And in India, you know, in Ayurveda, you're supposed to, I don't recommend this, but you know, the ancient teachers were not politically correct. They were super hyperbolic with their words. They were super and still are super bossy. And one of the things in the ancient teachings, it's like, if you have a client that needs meat, you tell them that you're giving them a vegetarian soup and you make them a strong meat bone soup to get them better. And you tell them it's vegetarian. Lie to their face. The doctor is told to tell the patient if they're dying in 6 months. You tell them they're as strong as the horse and they will never die. It's like we think this old way was like so spiritual and mystical and this and that. No. The old people, the old mystics, man, they would be canceled today, right? Like they were not concerned with your feelings and they were happy to lie to you. And you know, I sort of love that kind of Wild West spirit. And I think I and many people I know will have to go through a similar story of the Bali belly. I've had the Delhi belly where you're like, oh my God, there are so many good things about my country and my culture and Western medicine. And truly, we could talk for an hour about the horrors of Western medicine that are also true. But I think that that truth exists somewhere in the middle.
And I think too, like the way I look at it is like, I live my life as natural as I possibly can. And so when I do go to use it, I have no shame anymore. You know, it's like, you know what? It's okay. It's okay if I'm having a moment and my headache feels like it's gonna like burst my head open. Like it feels like there's knives like just stabbing the side of my head. It's okay if I take, you know, an ibuprofen or something like that. And that is something where I have compassion for myself in the moment, knowing that that's not how I live my life. So it's okay to have a Band-Aid every now and then until I get my strength up and then approach it in the way that I'm used to. And I think that's important learning and wisdom that comes from going to from the extremes and actually find, oh, wow, the middle is the best place to be. Yeah. It's been such a pleasure having you on the show and having this conversation. I think it's super powerful and important for my listeners to understand that it's okay to go natural and it's okay to be going through these Eastern philosophies, but don't discount the Western ones too. They have their place and their role, and there is wisdom there. It's just a matter of understanding what's going to work for you. And again, this idea of what works for someone may not work for another, and it's okay. And embracing that flexibility to be able to flow and know that things are ever evolving and changing, and what you needed today may not be what you need tomorrow.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Individualized medicine is best.
And I love that you've been able to go from this very science background of AI research and very science oriented, and then really kind of dabbling in the mystical realm and seeing like what can be birthed through that, and then learning how to bridge the gap and marry the two in harmony. Because I think that the science has its place and the mysticism has its place. And the whole reason why we struggle is because we think it's one or the other, and it's not, it's always and.
Exactly. And when you study each one deep enough, they meet, because we're just talking about reality. Mm-hmm. And science is very, very excited about material reality, and mysticism is very excited about etheric reality, but they do tend to meet in the middle. But it's been really nice. Thank you so much for having me here.
So what have you got going on that if anyone who's listening to the show really resonates with you and they want to learn more, maybe connect with you, what have you got going on and where can they find you?
Yeah, thank you. We have a school called the Shakti School, theshaktischool.com. And we do one thing once a year. It starts in January 17th. It's a year-long Ayurvedic health coaching program. And as you guys can see, as you've heard me speak, we are a very non-dogmatic, non-fundamentalist. We embrace what I've coined feminine form Ayurvedic medicine. And obviously we have the masculine as well. And so if people want to come join an Ayurveda inspired course, it's Ayurveda, but really a lot more. I call it Lady Life School. That starts January 17th.
Oh, wonderful. Well, I'll leave all those links for you guys in the show notes and down below the video if you're watching on YouTube. Katie, it was such a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for what an interesting conversation about health, healing, and also knowing that being empty is what can fill you up in the most incredibly magical way possible. So thank you so much for being on the show. And to my listeners, I love you so much. Have an incredible week, and I will be back with you next time. Thanks again for joining me for another show on the Enlighten Up podcast. I love you guys so much for all of your continued support. So remember to raise your vibe, find your tribe, and be open to the infinite possibilities held in the mysteries that surround us all. Thanks again for sharing the show with your family and friends. And if you're new to the show and you need to find out more information about me, please head on over to my website, NicoleFrolick.com, where you can join my newsletter. And please follow me on Instagram, Telegram, and YouTube. Keep your light bright, and I'll see you next week.